Part 2. Listening Comprehension. Section A. Directions. In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations. At the end of each conversation, one or more questions will be asked about what was said. But the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 1 with a single line through the center. Now let's begin with the 8 short conversations.
Question 1. Look at these low prices at these fashionable TV sets. Something is fishy, don't you think so?
Well, there have been a lot of robberies recently. Some of the stolen goods may have landed here.
What does the woman imply about the low-priced television sets?
Question 2.
I've been assigned to cover the governess speech today. What about you?
Nothing as grand as yours. I have to do an interview for the evening news about a man with dozens of cats. What do we learn about the speakers? Question 3. Didn't I see you going into the administration building this afternoon?
I needed to switch my computer class to the 950 section.
What do we learn from the conversation? Question 4. I guess you watched the quiz show on television last night. What did you think about it?
Well, it's great. The first 4 contestants won only small prizes, but the 5th left with a new luxury car.
What does the man say about the quiz show? Question 5. I can't find the arrival time of the New York to Boston Express on the schedule.
Look for New York in the left-hand column and follow it across until you find the hour listed in the Boston column.
What are the speakers most probably doing? Question 6. You look different today, but I can't quite put my finger on what it is.
Oh, yesterday I finally got around to that new barbershop in the mall and enjoyed their services.
What can be inferred about the man?
Question 7.
What do you think Picasso's painting exhibited in the City Museum?
Personally, I can't quite see the meaning of his modern works. Most of them remind me of the stuff my nephew brings home from the kindergarten. What does the man mean?
Question 8. Rod said he wanted to get involved in student government this year.
But he hasn't gone through a single meeting, has he?
What does the man imply about Rod?
Now you'll hear the 2 long conversations. Conversation 1. Good morning, madam. Can I help you?
Oh, I do hope so. I have to get to Manchester today, and my own car has broken down. Do you by any chance have a car available?
For how many days, madam?
3, just until the weekend.
And what sort of car did you have in mind?
Well, that depends a bit on the price, but I normally drive a Chevrolet. Do you have anything like that?
Yes, certainly. That's Group C, which includes Chevrolets and C-Arrows.
How much are they?
Well, for 3 days, you would have to have it under the unlimited mileage conditions, which will work out cheaper for Manchester anyway. Let's see, Group C, 3 to 5 days hire with unlimited mileage is £53 per day.
I see. Does that include everything?
It includes third-party insurance, but it does not include value-added tax, patrol, or CDW.
What's that?
CDW? Oh, that's to cover you in case you damage the hire car. Third-party insurance only covers you for damage to another vehicle. For Group C cars, it is £6 per day.
Okay, I think I'll have the Chevrolet.
Right. Could I have your driving license, please?
Certainly. Here we are.
So it's Miss J.B.
County?
Yes, that's right.
And the number is 509-024-BC-9CS, expiring the 1st of July, 2015. And you want to take it immediately?
Yes, I do, please.
Lovely. Well, you could just initial that box there for the CDW and that box there to confirm you have known driving convictions. Thank you. And then sign there. Great. That's it. Questions 9 to 11 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 9. Why does the woman want to hire a car? Question 10. What is the woman's main consideration in hiring a car? Question 11.
What does the daily charge include?
Conversation 2.
So, possible locations for the plant. First, the basic facilities for the region are generically very good, at least between the three main cities, Bilbao, Victoria in the south, and Santander. There is now a fast train link to the south of France and the west of Spain. Are there improvements affect Bilbao principally? The whole region benefits. First, the port area has been completely modernized and relocated, and airport has been extended, so the basic facilities are good.
Right. So, are we in the position to choose one of these cities?
Well, let's not rush into anything. I think it's a bad idea to assume we're going to choose a city. It might be better to think about one of the smaller towns.
Smaller places, yes. So, should we get details on the possible places?
Yes, we could do that. But we need, I think, first to check if your things. For example, tax benefits, grants, and anything like that. For locating to a smaller place, not one of these main cities, then we could make a better decision.
Yes, I agree. We've talked about the improved transport links in Bilboa. What about the links to the smaller towns? If it's a mountainous, hilly region, it could take an hour or more for a truck to reach a main road. So I think we need to look specifically at the train and links to smaller towns.
Yes, you're right. Road and rail and financial position. Questions 12 to 15 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 12. What are the speakers discussing? Question 13. What does the woman say about Bilbao, Victoria, and Santander? Question 14. What does the woman think they should do? Question 15. What is the man concerned about?
Section B, Directions. In this section, you will hear three short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 1 with a single line through the center.
Passage 1. In a study of older people with sisters and brothers, psychologist Deborah Gold of the Duke Center for the Study of Aging and Human Development found that about 20% said they were hostile or indifferent toward their sisters and brothers. Reasons for this range from inheritance disputes to hostility between spouses, but many of those who had poor relationships felt guilty, although most people admitted to some lingering rivalry. It was rarely strong enough to end the relationship. Only 4 out of the 54 people interviewed had completely broken with their sisters and brothers, and only 1 of the 4 felt comfortable with the break.
As sisters and brothers advanced into old age, closeness increased and rivalry diminished, explains Victor G. Sorinelli, a psychologist at Purdue University.
Most of the elderly people he interviewed said they had supportive and friendly dealings and got along well or very well with their sisters and brothers. Only 4% got along poorly. Gold found that as people age, they often become more involved with and interested in their sisters and brothers. 53% of those she interviewed said that contact with their sisters and brothers increase innate adulthood, with family and career obligations reduced. Many said they had more time for each other. Others said that they felt it with time to heal the wounds. A man who had recently reconciled with his brother told Gold there's something that lets older people to put aside the bad deeds of the past and focus a little on what we need now, especially when it's sisters and brothers. Questions 16 to 18 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 16. What does the study by Deborah Gold find about older people? Question 17. What has probably caused closeness to increase among sisters and brothers according to
Victor G. Sorinelli?
Question 18. What did the man who had recently reconciled with his brother tell Deborah Gold about older people?
Passage 2. Monarch butterflies, the large origin black insects, are common summer sights in northern United States and Canada. They brighten in parks and gardens as they fly among the flowers. What makes monarch butterflies particularly interesting is they migrate, all the way to California or Mexico and back. They are thought to be the only insect that does this. Every year in the late summer, monarchs begin their migration to the south. Those heading for Mexico go first for the Louisiana-Mississippi region. and then they fly to go across Mexico into Texas. Once in Mexico, they establish themselves in one of about 15 sites in the mountain forest. Each side provides the winter home for millions of monarchs. The butterflies are so numerous that they often cover the entire trees. When spring comes, they begin their long journey north. The question is often asked whether every butterfly makes the round-trip journey every year, and the answer is no. The average monarch lives about 9 months, so when fly the north, they might lay eggs in Louisiana and die. The eggs of that following generation may be found in Kentucky. The eggs of next generation may be in Wisconsin or Michigan. The last generation of the season, about the fourth, may make the journey back in Mexico and restart the cycle. Scientists learn about the monarch butterfly's migration by capturing and placing the identifying tags in the insects. By recapturing the attempt of the monarch and noting where they came from, the next scientist can figure out things like butterfly's age and its routing. Questions 19 to 22 were based on the passage you have just heard. Question 19. What is the unique about the monarch butterfly according to the speaker? Question 20. Where does the butterfly settle at the end of the migration? Question 21. What does the speaker say about the monarch butterfly's reproduction? Question 22. What is the talk mainly about?
Passage 3. People nowadays seem to have the sense that their time has become more limited.
That compared to
early generations, we spend more and more time working and have less and less free time to engage in leisure pursuits. But this premise turns out to be an illusion. The most comprehensive data from major time use service suggests, if anything, Americans today have more free time than early generations. The number of hours we work has not changed much, but we spend less time now on home tasks. So we have a great amount of time for leisure than in decades past. So why do we feel like time so scarce?
One problem is that our time has become more valuable and that time becomes worth more money.
We feel like we have less of it. Workers who bill or get paid by the hour think employer and fast food workers report focusing more on pursuing more money than those who get paid the salary. And the fact has been fast. In one experiment, people were told to play the role of consultant and bill their time by either $9 an hour or $90 an hour. When people billed their time for $90 an hour, they report feeling far more priced for time. Thinking about our time as money changes our behaviors as well. In one study, people who were instructed to think about money before entering a cafe spent less time chatting with the other patrons and more time working.
Those who are thinking about their time did reverse spending time socializing instead of working.
Questions 23 to 25 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 23. What does the speaker say people now feel about time? Question 24. What do the data from major time use service show? Question 25. What happens when we think about our time as money?
Section C. Directions. In this section, you will hear a passage three times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the second time, you are required to fill in the blanks with the exact words you have just heard. Finally, when the passage is read for the third time, you should check what you have written. Now listen to the passage. The first copyright law in the United States was passed by Congress in 1790. In 1976, Congress enacted the latest copyright law, taking into consideration the technological developments that had occurred since the passage of the Copyright Act of 1909. For example, in 1909, anyone who wanted to make a single copy of a literary work for personal use had to do so by hand. The very process imposed a limitation on the quantity of materials copied. Today, a photocopier can do the work in seconds. The limitation has disappeared. The 1909 law did not provide full protection for films and sound recordings, nor did it anticipate the need to protect radio and television. As a result, violations of the law and abuses of the intent of the law have lessened the financial rewards of authors, artists, and producers. The 1976 Copyright Act has not prevented these abuses fully, but it has clarified the legal rights of the injured parties and given them an avenue for remedy. Since 1976, the Act has been amended to include computer software, and guidelines have been adopted for fair use of television broadcasts. These changes have cleared up much of the confusion and conflict that followed in the wake of the 1976 legislation. The fine points of the law are decided by the courts and by acceptable common practice over time. As these decisions and agreements are made, we modify our behavior accordingly. For now, we need to interpret the law and its guidelines as accurately as we can and to act in a fair manner.
Now the passage will be read again. The first copyright law in the United States was passed by Congress in 1790. In 1976, Congress enacted the latest copyright law, taking into consideration the technological developments that had occurred since the passage of the Copyright Act of 1909. For example, in 1909, anyone who wanted to make a single copy of a literary work for personal use had to do so by hand. The very process imposed a limitation on the quantity of materials copied. Today, a photocopier can do the work in seconds. The limitation has disappeared. The 1909 law did not provide full protection for films and sound recordings, nor did it anticipate the need to protect radio and television. As a result, violations of the law and abuses of the intent of law have lessened the financial rewards of authors, artists, and producers. The 1976 Copyright Act has not prevented these abuses fully, but it has clarified the legal rights of the injured parties and given them an avenue for remedy. Since 1976, the Act has been amended to include computer software, and guidelines have been adopted for fair use of television broadcast. These changes have cleared up much of the confusion and conflict that followed in the wake of the 1976 legislation. The fine points of the law are decided by the courts and by acceptable common practice over time. As these decisions and agreements are made, we modify our behavior accordingly. For now, we need to interpret the law and its guidelines as accurately as we can and to act in a fair manner.
Now the passage will be read for the third time. The first copyright law in the United States was passed by Congress in 1790. In 1976, Congress enacted the latest copyright law, taking into consideration the technological developments that had occurred since the passage of the Copyright Act of 1909. For example, in 1909, anyone who wanted to make a single copy of a literary work for personal use had to do so by hand. The very process imposed a limitation on the quantity of materials copied. Today, a photocopier can do the work in seconds. The limitation has disappeared. The 1909 law did not provide full protection for films and sound recordings, nor did it anticipate the need to protect radio and television. As a result, violations of the law and abuses of the intent of the law have lessened the financial rewards of authors, artists, and producers. The 1976 Copyright Act has not prevented these abuses fully, but it has clarified the legal rights of the injured parties and given them an avenue for remedy. Since 1976, the Act has been amended to include computer software, and guidelines have been adopted for fair use of television broadcast. These changes have cleared up much of the confusion and conflict that followed in the wake of the 1976 legislation. The fine points of the law are decided by the courts and by acceptable common practice over time. As these decisions and agreements are made, we modify our behavior accordingly. For now, we need to interpret the law and its guidelines as accurately as we can and to act in a fair manner. This is the end of the listening comprehension.